Yeah, people, a lot of people are going now towards the one, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. Use your palms filled with light to bless oneself in remembrance of all the holy beings that are here with us always. So yesterday we were talking about the thinking faculty and the knowledge of self, which will continue today. And I think this first sentence is so crucial. It says, as long as we remain ignorant of the self, one cannot study human nature properly. I don't know if it was one of the nuns told me when I was very young. It's like this whole reality that you're living. I mean, I had a real mystic. You remember, I've talked about her before. But it's like this is your laboratory. Everything you experience is something that others are experiencing also. So take your lessons and learn from them so you can be an aid and a support to others. You know, what a wonderful thing to learn in the third grade. And it was a difficult time. You know, the family was breaking up, and, you know, so I think she knew that. She never mentioned that. Often we hear people say, I'm so disappointed in my friends. Who hasn't said it? I'm so disheartened by my neighbors. I've lost my faith in mankind. I can bear animals. I can tolerate trees and plants better than a human being. I will always try to avoid places where there are people. Why do these thoughts come? Where do they come from? And what causes them? It is the lack of understanding of oneself. The more one understands oneself, the more one finds that everything that is lacking in others is also lacking in oneself. It's a mirror. You know, what that they... thing that niggles us the most about somebody else is something about us, and it could be hidden from our own sight, and in that way we can be grateful that they're showing us something. Does a person become less by finding faults in oneself? No, we become greater, for we not only find that all the faults which are in others are also found within, but that all the merits of the others are also our own merits. It's so interesting to me because I think it's really true. We are mirrors for each other, you know. And it's good to have really good friends that you can say, I'm seeing this in another person and it's really bothering me. And maybe I do that. And if I do, will you tell me when I do that so I can be aware, you know? But here's the other part of this, you know, like I'm not talking about crippling self-criticism. That's not what Merchant's talking about. He's talking about dispassioned observation of oneself. It's different. A kind of objectivity, like, that's niggling me. Where is that residing in me, either outwardly or hidden? So again, by finding faults in oneself, or one could say, seeking to know where that the rest of the mirror is, or those edges, you know, do we become less? And Murshid says, no, we become greater, for we not only find a way that the faults, which are in others, are also found within, but that all the merits of others are also our own merits. So those things that we admire in others, although we may not think that we possess them, we do, because we recognize them in someone else. You can't see it if you don't know it to be true. With our faults and merits, we become more complete. We do not become less. With our faults and merits, we become more complete. We do not become less. Perfection isn't all that interesting. You know what I'm saying? Once you see it, it's like, okay. But if it has a little something that's off, you know, you want to go back there again and again and again and again. You know? Makes it interesting. Only self-realization can give us full independence. Only self-realization can give us full independence. There would be no exaggeration to say that it would be no exaggeration to say that by self-realization that our hearts become greater than the universe. The saints and sages, the illuminated souls who have brought light to others, have been the self-realized ones. They've been independent also. They haven't made demands of others. They just give. One might ask, then where is God? Where is the place of God if self-realization brings one to perfection? I mentioned this yesterday. And Murshid's reply was, the answer is that God is a stepping stone to self-realization. So again, remember I talked about that arc of ascent and descent, and about, you know, sometimes the yogis is to raise the kundalini, but then you get up there and it's like, you know, how do you bring that back down and integrate it? When you see the dervish's turn in Turkey, you see it all there. It's a symbolic language. They line up in this kind of unity, and one by one they start to go out. It's like this unity is God, and then one by one they go out. It's like the individuation process, and in perfect harmony, without bumping into each other or a lot of self-expression, everyone's making that same motion. So that's also perfect unity. And then, in the end, they come back again into that line, together, that unity. It's creation. It's the expression of creation. I remember being in Morocco, and I was in one of the, it could have been Marrakesh or Fez, I don't know which, but there was this beautiful, it's kind of a, if you saw it, you would know it, because it's kind of a thing that they use in a lot of movies and stuff, this beautiful, large mosque area. And when I looked above, and I think it was a madrasa also, it was a center for education. And I looked above, and I was, of course, it was beautiful. It was like being in the side of a kaleidoscope. But the wood had these different panels. And I remember seeing it. It was like this square that then started to break apart and made these other shapes. And at the end, the last panel was back in the square. And I thought, this is the expression of all of creation, dispersing and being in unity. It was really beautiful. I need to look for those slides, because I think it really tells the picture. So one might think then, where is the place of God if self-realization brings one to perfection? The answer is that God is a stepping stone to self-realization. The godly one is not always self-realized, but the self-realized one is godly. So it's both ways. The godly one is not always self-realized, but the self-realized one is godly.
Can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
Could you, in terms of what he's talking about, what does he mean by self-realization?
I think that what Murshid says is that, you know, he said it at the beginning, that by studying our own human nature, we come to understand. And that's why I think he also says in one of the 10 Sufi thoughts, the only holy book is the holy manuscript of nature, the scripture that can illuminate every soul. And so I think that he's asking us to look deeply, deeply within. And we're going to do a practice that I think will help us with that. And it would be one that, you know, if you have a teacher, ask them if you can take it on, and if not, you might think about taking it with you and using it, because I think it's a profound practice, and it's one that our circles used recently, and it's just, for me, the realizations have been extremely profound, and maybe Gemma and others can speak to that, but I think... Answer me your question again. I'm not even sure I've answered it. I get myself off track. Say it again.
What does self-realization mean?
Yeah, I think it's being fully awake. You know, the unconscious mind is the conscious mind. Everything's present. And I think it's also not being confused by outward appearances. I mean, you know that as a scientist. Things are not as they appear. And I think it's very important to see things as impulses, or Sufis would call it ayats, clues. What are the clues that are given to me to awaken? Murshid describes a little bit more, I think, and ask me again if it's not clear in a few minutes. All the different ways that lead to God, different religions, faiths, occult schools, mystical schools, all these bring one in the end to the same goal, and that's self-realization. So we can also say that's the integration of our yearning for unity with God and bringing that into the self. I mean, it's one thing to have the desire, and there's one thing to integrate that desire, become that desire. It's really the Ishkala Mabudala. We've been working with that as a practice as well in our circle, but we've been using each word, you know, Ishk being that burning desire to know something, to experience something. Allah, of course, is the unity of all the sacred names in the one name. Mabud is the thing that deserves an object, our object of veneration and esteem and reverence, and then Allah again. So when you look at that phrase, piece by piece, it's really quite profound. It has to do with yearning and the completion of yearning. I like it. People often say, oh, that means God is love, lover, and the beloved. But I think it's, Murshid says in other things, and recently maybe in the Bulasaki, that in God's desire, that we are the creation of God desiring to know him, herself. We're an outward expression of that. And so this is why Murshid always tells us, the beloved is within everything. We forget that because we get catalyzed by certain things. But I think that self-realization is seeing the unity of all things. Okay, so Murshid says, there are four different ways by which one can attain the knowledge of this truth. One person has been told that self-knowledge... Where's Raheem, by the way? Where did he disappear to?
I was wondering
too. Raheem, he was on his way.
Yeah,
I don't know, maybe he's coming now. One person has been told that self-knowledge is the guide to perfection and says, yes, it must be so. But then again, such a person knows no more than that. Here's the thing also, Rabia, for you and others where questions arise. It is interesting because in the question, the answer is already implied. So by you asking that question, it's a very interesting piece of the path for you to work on. Now, I may be asking a different question, another maybe. But as soon as that arises, that yearning to know deeper is the teacher arising, the spirit of guidance. Okay, then he says, the second kind of person, there's another person who's read this or that book. That is the self-knowledge, which leads to perfection. And that person, so one person's told, that's what it is. One person studies, and they say, that person thinks it must be true because it was written in a book. And then there's the third person who's reasoned it out. I'll use my logic. I'll do dialectic debate in my head, thinking it through. And by reasoning, by synthesizing, comes to knowledge that is one which has become many. So you see the singularity becoming the many and the many becoming the singularity. That this variety, again, is gathered into one. And that this one is to not be, is, I think I have to start all over again. Let me read it the correct way so it sounds the way Merchant intended. There's a third person who's reasoned it out. And by reasoning, by synthesizing, comes to knowledge that it is one which has become many. That this variety is again gathered into one. And that this one is to be found in oneself. No doubt the more such a person reason helps support their belief, the more that person will be consoled. But he's indicating to us these are different methods, but maybe that's not quite it. So then he says, and there's the fourth person who realizes the truth within. Not by reason, but by experience. And that is the way of the mystic. So I don't know how it is for other people, but for me, I was always rather independent. Surprise, surprise. And I would go to a Catholic church, and there were these rules that, you know, various Vatican councils had made. And I would be... was always a very good student. I was always very quiet. But when they said things that just didn't make sense to me, you know, I was, you know. And, you know, one of the things that I remember them saying was, if a man and a woman, man and a man, and then it was man and a woman, are married and they become divorced and they remarry, they can no longer receive the sacraments of the church. And I would say, so you would say that two people that are not happy, maybe even bringing harm upon each other and their children, should stay together to be able to receive the holy sacraments? What? Where's God in that? I can't imagine God inviting me to the table of the feast and then saying, pulling the plate away and saying, you can't eat. I don't believe you. He said, those are man-made rules. That's not God. You say, God doesn't say that, you know? And what about all those people that weren't supposed to eat meat? And then they change that too. It's like those things don't make sense. I think maybe I was blessed with that spirit of independence that gives me my own inner compass. And whether someone says it's right or wrong doesn't matter much to me. I remember there was a boy in junior high. And he wanted to date me, whatever that means in junior high. And he'd say, and he really had this crush. And I was very independent then. I was studying and I had plenty to do with the family. And he was really cute and all the girls liked him. So of course it really bothered him that I wasn't having much to do, right? So he called me on the telephone. He said, "You have to go out. You have to say you're my girlfriend." I said, "No, Billy, I like you very much. You're my friend, but I don't need that right now." And he said, "If you don't tell me, I'm going to tell everybody that you're a bad girl and you sleep around with other people." And I said, "I welcome you to do so, because anyone that knows me knows that would not be true." Shut him right up. You see what I'm saying? So you know who you are, and no matter what people say, you know who you are. You can't change that. You know how to be a good person. And the way one is a good person is maybe different than the way another one is. It's not to judge. We all make it. We all make this world go round. And then he says, Murshid says, how does the mystic proceed to experience it? Because he says that the mystic has it from a direct experience. I mean, that's what we're seeking. And yesterday, Jabbar said, you know, Joe Miller always said, you get more stinking from thinking than you do drinking, but to feel is for real. You know, you have that inner sense. I hope you do. And I hope if people have taken that away from you, you pray and God gifts you with it. And Murshid says, so how does the mystic proceed to the experience? And he answers, says, by the mystical process of turning the eyes within. By shutting out the outside world for a moment and going into meditation. And by realizing one's existence as a life, as a life, as a magnetism, and as an energy. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. The practice is sounds simple, really something very important. So meditation then lifts the consciousness. And you know, those of you that have done a retreat, a solitary retreat, or even in group, you know, it becomes, when the outward stimulus slows down, the inward world becomes more dynamic. It's very important, even to take a little bit of time each day to do that for oneself. And the Murshid says that by doing so, one goes higher and higher, and we see that we are happiness, ourself as well as our creator is happiness. That there's a kind of like, you know, when you've been in a retreat and sometimes group, but you know, silent individual retreats, it can get very noisy, and then all of a sudden it calms down, and then it's just like, it just is as it is. What?
Like just what happened.
Oh, I didn't even hear it. Isn't that interesting? I mean, I can get very focused and none of that comes in. But, you know, it's just that it's a stillness and it's a mindfulness of witnessing. And we're going to do a practice with that regard in a few. Well, we're going to do it right now. I put on my notes here. So there's this sacred word and it's Shahid. Shahid. And Shahid is the witness. Now this aspect, this divine aspect, has to do with data that we absorb through our senses. But we know sometimes that can be a little deceiving, right? In The Hague, in the Netherlands, I was at the museum of the artist M.C. Escher. And if you know his work, it's like, is it going that way? Is it going that? And the room, some of them are like that. And you're kind of can be, well, we know it's just an illusion, but it feels very real, or what a magician does. Mm-hmm. You know, our senses say, wait, but you know, something's happened there. So these are things that we absorb through our senses. And it informs our our experience. And another word for shahid is kind of the testifier. I mean, I like that in some churches. You have someone having an experience, someone's testifying and witnessing for them. And it's this quality that expresses God's witnessing all things. So, you know, they say in India, you know, it's like the lila, the divine dance, and God's witnessing this play that's happening. Or it's like when the Buddha was under the tree and all these things arose, they looked real, they sounded real, he could see them as real, but then he realized they were all illusions too. There was something that happened very recently that I was going to share with you, because I always go to that one story that when my husband Joe and I were in retreat with Alan Wallace at the Shambhala Center. And many of you have heard this, some of you haven't, but there was that new person that had come to offer service there. And she was a rather large woman. And she also seemed rather shy. And that evening, we all went to bed, and the next morning, someone said to the group, to the group of workers, "Oh, there! A big bear came and got in the refrigerator and stole the milk and the butter." And she thought, I think maybe she had herself gone in that refrigerator at night. She assumed they were calling her the big bear. There really was a big bear that came in, see? So it created this whole misunderstanding, and she had her feelings hurt, and then it was like, you know, I mean, it came out, "We're not talking about you. It's okay if you get in the fridge. It was a big bear. We just want people to be aware there are bears on the site," you know? So these things can, just like on the first day, I said there was something that was said to me, and it sort of didn't quite settle right, and so immediately I went to the breath of the mind, the air breath in and out of, and then the person appeared and I could say something and clarify it. You know, things aren't as they appear, nor are they otherwise, the Buddha says. Things are not as they appear, nor are they otherwise. So the witness, it's this activity of witnessing everything, but then taking it into the heart. So we witness with our senses. And here's another thing. The way can we do that without judgment? Like, I've even talked to some people close to me. Our language almost needs to change. Like, I love roses. I think it's so beautiful is so different than saying, roses are beautiful. They offer so much fragrance to the world. It changes the subject of it. Do you see what I'm saying? So one can say, the atmosphere is very hot, or one can say, I'm so very hot. It kind of gives it a more objective observation through our senses. Instead of, I love the way this tastes, it's like, the pie tastes good. You know, it's a different, it's interesting to think about language, how it influences and how, you know, centric it is. So this is a way of witnessing without judgment. It's shahid. It's this all-pervading witness. And Kabir, K-H-A-B-I-R, like our dear Murshid that's left this world, is this inner awareness. And it's the one that knows reality deeper. So it's like taking this in, whatever's coming, and taking it inside using this penetrating deep insight to see through appearances. So it's these two things. The outer comes to the inner, and then the inner becomes expression to the outer. It's a very profound practice. And the more you work with it, it will reveal itself to you. It's hard for me to just say. It's like the first no, or someone tells you something and you say, oh yeah, that's true. But how do you really know if you don't experience it? It's good to have an indication that's where we're going. But then when you work with it, you have your own realization. It's very important. Shall we try it? So emphasis here is on the heed, Yah Shahid, and Yah Kabir, the vowels are extended. And again, as you do it, you know, there's a lot of information coming in, but, you know, if you work with the practice, notice if there's certain things that start to vibrate, or the way you sense things differently, the way you know things differently, like a deep understanding and knowing. So we'll do 11 times aloud, 11 times on a whisper, and 11 times silently. Ya Shahid, Ya Kabir, Ya Shahid. Ya Kabir, Ya Shahid, Ya Kabir, Ya Shahid. Halfway through, let's experiment. Let's slightly open our eyes with Shahid and then close them with Kabir. Let's see what that does while we're doing the practice. Ya Shahid, Ya Kabir. Ya Shahid, Ya Kabir, Ya Shahid, Ya Kabir. Ya Shahid, Ya Kabir, Ya Shahid, Ya Kabir, Ya Shahid. Now whisper. Breathe. I would say let's breathe in, hold, and out Kabir with the intention of drawing the external world, holding it for a moment, and breathing into the globe of the heart, just like this beautiful fanning of the embers of the heart. So we breathe in, hold for a moment, and then come. Yeah. silently breathing in. Shahid, holding for a moment. Let there be a gap. And breathing out. Kabir. Ya Shahid, Ya Kabir. And again, meditation, through meditation, the consciousness lifts. And as one goes still higher, we see that we are happiness, ourself, as well as the creator of happiness. So, you know, this is, I've said it to many people around me. If you want to choose happiness. We can catch ourselves when we start to get on that track of whatever it is, complaining or there's something wrong with one's life, well, choose happiness. Try to do things that bring you happiness and give others happiness. Mostly, if you find you try to give others happiness, you will receive happiness. But not with an expectation that that will come from whoever you may be offering happiness to. It doesn't work quite that way. But the universe has a way. I was reading something a few days ago, and it was someone that was a student of Dzogchen Rinpoche. And he said that a lady came to him and said she was very sad. She was going to die. Her doctor said she was dying. And she was surprised when Dzogchen Rinpoche laughed and said, "We're all dying. Some of us just know when." So he gave her a practice to do, to be of benefit to other people. By changing her thinking, guess what happened? She healed herself. It's possible. We have a little fly here. So I want to give you this story, which many of you've heard at the last camp, or if you've been on the online classes, but I think it bears repeating because it's a wonderful little story. So this is the true part of the story, and then the rest is a kind of fable, and the author is unknown. But I've made friends with, I'm connected with the Nakshabandhu tradition also. And this sheikh is also connected. So we found each other, and we correspond almost. And he sends these beautiful quotes and sayings, and he's shared a lot of wonderful books with me in PDF form in English. This is a story he sent, and I received this shortly before our spring camp, and I offered it, but it bears repeating. I think it's a lovely story. So, there was a bird who lived in the desert. and this bird was very sick. The poor little bird had no feathers, it had nothing to eat or drink, and no shelter to live in or under. And one day a dove was passing by and saw the sick bird, and the dove stopped and said, the dove stopped by the sick bird, and the sick bird said, "Where are you going?" And the dove replied, "I'm going to heaven." And the sick bird said, "Oh, please, please find out for me when my suffering will come to an end." And the dove said, "Surely I will," and bid goodbye to this poor sick bird. The dove reached heaven and shared the message of the sick, of the sick bird with the angel in charge at the entrance gate. And the angel said, "For the next 7 years of its life, the bird has to suffer like this, no happiness till then." The dove said, "When the sick bird hears this, he will get disheartened. Could you suggest any solution for this?" And the angel said, "Tell the bird to recite this verse: thank you, God, for everything." And here it says, "Thank you, Allah, for everything." And the dove, on meeting the sick bird again, delivered the message the angel had for it. After 7 days, the dove was passing by again and saw the bird was quite happy. The feathers started to grow on its body. A new little plant grew up in the desert. A little pond of water was there. And the bird was just singing and dancing, very happy. And the dove was astonished. The angel had said that there would be no happiness for this bird for the next 7 years. With this question in the mind, the dove went to visit the angel again at the heaven's gate. The dove put forth his inquiry to the angel, and the angel replied, "Yes, it is true. There was no happiness for the bird for 7 years, but because the bird was reciting the verse, 'Thank you, Allah, for everything,' in every situation, his life changed. When the bird fell down on the hot sand, it said, 'Thank you, God, for everything.' When it could not fly, it said, 'Thank you, Allah, for everything.' When it was thirsty and there was no water around, it said, 'Thank you, Allah, for everything.' Whatever the situation, the bird kept on repeating, 'Thank you, Allah, for everything.' And therefore, the 7 years got dissolved in 7 days." And then it says, "Adopt this verse in life. Whatever the situation, recite this verse: 'Thank you, God, for everything.'" It makes a difference. I've been trying to remember this. Thank you, God, for everything. So this little verse goes on to say, by the unknown author, "The purpose of sharing this message is to make all of us aware how powerful the attitude of gratitude, is. It can reshape our lives. Let's recite this verse continuously to experience the shift in our life. So be grateful and see the change in your attitude. Be humble, and you will never stumble." The attitude of gratitude, being humble, will never stumble. Isn't that nice? I mean, only the very high stumble. You know, if we're lowly, it's not so far to fall. For the first time, I ended quite early. But we can review anything we have discussed, or if there are questions, or if something didn't make sense. Not that I can explain it, but... perhaps we could meditate on it together. Are there any comments or questions that people have?
What book is the Hanaya Khan's lesson from today?
Let me see. Oh, I'm not hooked to the internet. I have the link in this. I do want to make this plug. Those of you that aren't on our mail list, if you're at all interested, maybe once a week, no more, we send out messages of inspiration from the unity of religious ideals, the brotherhood, sisterhood work. I do classes online that you can just click on the link and then you're in the chat room with us on Zoom. And it's quite wonderful because I ask them to come a little bit early and often we're chatting and, you know, we have a loyal Murid in Africa and some people in Italy and some people in Switzerland and Belgium, and they're joining us. We're all there together for the same purpose of sharing the message. So everyone is welcome. It doesn't have to just be someone that's under my tutelage. I welcome everyone, and I put it on everywhere. I feel like the message is for everyone. So this, I can send you the link, though.
Okay.
On that webpage, the reason I'm saying something about it is that I post all these. We're recording them. When we do it online, the video is also recorded. And I publish the study guide and a link to the longer reading. So I think this could be from The Alchemy of Happiness, but I'm not into it. I think that's where it's from, that part of the message volume.
And I can take an email if someone wants to be on the list.
Yeah, it's nice. And,
so
you know,
just give you my email.
You just give us the email, and then if you decide you don't want to be on it, it's easy. Just write and say, unsubscribe me. It's no problem. We have a good mailing list of about 2,000 people worldwide. And so, you know, it's like we just send out these little, you know, little message ships, so to speak, and try to spread the message far and wide. For me, the message has changed my life. The more you think you know, the more you don't know. And the message shows you that. But there's also something in the message that when I picked it up, almost every sentence I would read, I'd say, oh yeah, I get it. Oh yeah, Murshid knows, he understands me. You know, and I really... I have this very small little heart frame that's just, you know, his face in it. And, you know, I have his presence around a lot in the house and things. So he's there, but he's also here. And someone at one of the colleges I was teaching at was cleaning in the office. And I must have seen that picture again and again when he came into cleaning. He said, say, I want to ask you, is that your father? And I said, it was a picture of Murshid, and I said, yeah. Someone else, I remember, I was at a retreat, and it might have been a federation, and they went around the circle, and they said, how are you connected? What does the message mean to you in your life? What's Murshid mean? You know, how do you feel connected? And all I could say is it's somehow it just seems to be in the DNA. Like it's that deeply, you know, alive. And yet Murshid is so universal. He brings all, it's like what you said, Narana, that meeting the message and the dances illuminated your own path. You know, your root religion that you were raised with. Somehow it awakens us to other things. So I believe in a message, whatever that is that inspires you. And I also know that I couldn't have gotten where I am without really great teachers that I willingly followed their advice. I believed that they had knowledge to share, and I took it, and I did it. Oh, I don't know. And others have something to say, questions, comments. Gemma, you had meant to say something the first day when we were talking about the purification breaths, which we could do again. You were talking about that you felt it changed your perspective on life. And
well, and
Jamar isn't here. And because I saw Jabbar, and he went, radiate to me, you know. And it's that, I think the expression itself says a lot. And there's a piece, I mentioned the word radiate, and there was something there, but it didn't feel like it fully formed. And the reason that word, I radiate, when we exhale, I radiate life and light, is so significant, because what I discovered within myself is that it uplifted me.
Yes.
And it gave me an optimism that just that word of radiating that back outward, if it were just taking it in, it wouldn't do the same thing. It was that element of radiating it in return, receiving and returning. And so, I just feel my outlook has changed about many things, even when things seem gloomy, or it's sort of, I telling you or somebody, when there's clouds in the sky, it's like, yep, I feel those rays coming through. They're there.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, they're there. So.
Yeah. I do think it transforms us to have a more optimistic point of view. And so I really wanted you to share that. Thank you for sharing. Anyone else?
Could you describe like a typical day for you, like the days that you don't teach?
Yeah, because I've retired now. So my typical day is, I was in, when we were in the cabin yesterday morning, I think it was, we decided to kind of take the morning off and stay quiet. And I was sitting there and I was doing my practices and I said, the only thing that's missing is the television and the morning news. So that's what I do. I get up and my dog, Parker's always there. He's my buddy, you know. And so we always have a little, he's always so happy. It's like, oh, you're awake. And he does his yoga, and I reminds me to do a bend over and touch my toes a little bit. Then we go downstairs. He goes outside. I make a cappuccino. And then it depends. We have a three-story home, and it's just the three of us, the dog and Joe and I. So it doesn't really get very dirty, but I finally let the maids go. I thought, why am I going to do other things? In them? So I clean the house. I had a Marie call me from the Netherlands, and I missed the appointment. Then I realized, oh my God. So she was still available, and she said, I love it when I think about you just doing ordinary things like cleaning your house. You know, I don't know what people think, but I enjoy that so much. I have found that I'm enjoying so much just the really doing simple things and enjoying them. They become a meditation. So I take care of that. Then Parker and I usually go for a walk. And I have a membership at one of the local hotels, the Westin. And it has a beautiful swimming pool with beautiful grounds. It's very cheap. It's cheaper than any gym in our area. And it has an outdoor pool. So in the winter, I can swim there also. I can swim through a little tunnel, and I go swimming. And there's a group, a small group that are members. Not everyone is. But we're kind of like our own little, I don't know, we have a nice connection. So we check in with each other. And then sometimes if Parker goes with me, because he's now a registered therapy dog, that the hotels are connected. We have a big union station, and it connects to the hotel. There's all these walkways, and I can connect to a second hotel. So we walk, and he's just like a rock star, you know? And then I come home, and in the morning, I always spend, it's the first time where I feel like I've had the luxury. You know, like I'm reading Ibn Arabi again, and I'm reading, you know, Al-Hujwiri again. I'm reading the old masters and studying them. I always read something from the Buddhist tradition. I do at least one set of my rosary in the morning because I feel like it's very good for me to do the Apostles' Creed and my Hail Marys and Our Father. So I do all those practices. And, You know, that's always the first thing before I leave the house. Or sometimes, if Parker's very insistent to go on his walk, well, I'll do practices while I'm walking, you know, like they are. And then Joe comes home, and he's really diligent with his exercise. He either goes to yoga or does something. We kind of have a gym area downstairs, and he does the treadmill or elliptical, and then we have something to eat, and that's kind of it, and we're together. One big dog pile is what we say. So that's kind of it. But, you know, if you've been, I don't know if we're Facebook friends, but, you know, I've been traveling quite a bit and going on adventures and more to come. So, but, you know, when I can choose, I seem to be an extrovert. I'm really not. It's a stretch for me. I've adapted to being more out there, but I really enjoy my solitude. And so I find that I'm becoming more and more quiet and more studious in that way, just for my own yearning, inner yearning, you know, and I feel so blessed to have a good retirement and the time. Yeah, it's quite extraordinary. And I feel thankful every day, because one of the things that I do know how precious this human life is, and I also know how, as one grows older, how capacities may diminish and we become more vulnerable. So I try to be mindful of taking care in that way, you know, staying strong and also preparing for the eventuality when disease or sickness or fall takes over, and that, you know, like, I'll be okay with that. I just have to strengthen from within and be ready for death. Ready for death. Try to practice that at night when I go to sleep. Because it's like that. And I'm an absolute Gemini, and I were talking somewhat recently, and I said, I just know it's like a dream. If we're not awake when we take that last breath, it won't only be a dream, it'll be a nightmare. We'll be terribly confused. We need to be practicing for that moment.
I might add that another big part of Murshida Nuria's day is receiving many, many communications. It's always in a flow of people coming and seeking your guidance, and also she's uplifting to be around. She's very good at doing that and helping.
I have a lot of correspondence.
I would like to add that it's very easy to love a person when they're doing that kind of inner work and service. It's very easy to love you because you're doing that work.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
Well, you know, I had a dream in this past week, and the main message, and it was like an imperative thing, I was going around telling people, we need to love each other as Jesus loved. Remember, love each other as Jesus loved. You know, and I think, what an amazing bodhisattva Jesus was. You know, to take accusations. What an example. To take all those accusations in silence. So many bad things were being said about him. And then he very willingly sacrificed himself and was there on the cross with people that had been convicted of other things, other crimes. And he, you know, I just think about that, you know. I'm more and more, I think, I feel so connected to that. Just that great love and self-sacrifice. I mean, there was a time, some people know, where I've asked Murshid continually, can I be free of this responsibility? And every time it's just this, no, get to work. Can I please be? No, I don't want it. No, I don't want it. Oh, get to work. Nope, not yet. And then when I retired from college, I thought, oh, now maybe I could let go of all the students and the teaching and just be hidden. And then what happened? I was appointed to the head of the Sufi movement. Of course, I wiggled my way out of that one eventually because I felt that my greater capacity, and people have said that, you know, people that are working with me, you're just so much more accessible because when you're running an organization or co-running it, which I did with Murshid Nawab, it's a lot. And a lot of it's just managing the politics and the administrative part and selling properties and insurance. It can be that kind of administration too, as well as being the spiritual director. And it's just made me so much freer and so much happier. I feel like it's given me a greater ability to just serve. And again, you don't have to be sitting in front of a class. Do it where you are, wherever you are. Try to be kind and, or nothing else, just smile and you know how it is. We go
I
places.
I was just going to say, and whenever I visit Murshid and Nuria and we go to do something, and sometimes Parker comes with us too, and
the
so
dog.
It's just a constant flow. I mean, before you know it, you've met at least 20 people, and you're really good friends with them by the time you leave. And it's just, she's open. People are drawn to her too. It's interesting. She doesn't even have to do anything. People just come up. Or if she says hello to someone, and you're having a friendly conversation with people who live somewhere else in the United States, and then you become friends on Facebook, and so, you know, the circle keeps growing, but there's never a space where that that joyful spirit and also that spiritual center of herself isn't a part of that. It's always there, and people respond to that. And people have fun. When I go out by myself, it's not like that.
We have a lot of fun. But yeah, you know, and I didn't used to be that way, because again, I was so shy and I kind of withdrawn, but the message has given me courage. And you know, it's like Miguel, when we first met, it's like, you know, we started talking immediately. In the past, I was reflecting on that when I first started coming to camps. I might not do that. I might not have felt all that comfortable doing it. But, you know, now it's like we're all here together. We're in the mix. And it's like, let's get to know each other. Let's be Facebook friends. I'm on Instagram, but I don't quite understand that. That's just pictures, but sometimes you can share something more in your, on your Facebook. Yeah. But, thank you for saying that. That's a great great blessing, really, that you give. It's like a prayer. Thank you. The most important thing is love, I think. Not always easy to do.
Or having the friendly manner, as you've taught us, as Murshid teaches.
Yeah, a manner of friendliness.
Manner of friendliness.
There's that a beautiful teaching in the Message volume about the manner of friendliness. So, and also consideration. You know, it's like, you know, I was so glad in the dance again, Narana, that you said, not everyone wants to feel, you know, like when we touch our hands.
Yeah.
Sometimes it can be more delicate. And being, you know, I think Murshid Sadi, when he teaches the dance and others, it's like, be mindful at the pace of others or the need of others for the contact. It can be more subtle. And I think all those things are some of the things that we've talked about here, just that awareness and observation. Joe, what about you? You've come every day very faithfully. Thank you for being here.
Been enjoyable. The whole camp.
Good.
Time.
Good.
Some great folks.
Good. Great. Anything else? Any other questions or things you want to share about your life? Or the path? Yes.
The folder in the teachings and practices.
Yes.
I missed the price on it. I wanted to.
I have some.
It's 20, yeah.
20? Thank
you. Yeah, and we'll take anything. Yeah. But we just kind of covered the expenses. I mean, we'd rather people have them than not have them, so. You know. It all comes out in the mix. People are generous and kind, so we're doing well.
Yeah, I have them here because I was getting ready to take them back.
When this work touches them that way, they understand how important it is that it continues on.
Yeah, thank you. Well, shall we conclude then? This is where I hear the so long farewell. I bid you adieu, adieu, adieu to you and you and you. Do 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 do. One year, just another quick story. One year, we had Murshida died, and Murshida Aziza come stay with us. I think I've told this, some of you know this. And there was a conductor from New York that came and constructed from the Midwest a 45-piece string orchestra to play some of Mersha Dyett's music for Christmas. It was a benefit. His children, Mersha Dyett's children and the grandchildren, some of them came. And so there people were either staying, Murshida Aziz and Murshid Hidayat, and stayed with us, and the conductor and the children stayed at a neighbor's who was very kind to offer that. And Joe said, you know, it was kind of like the big chill, you know? And we all gathered, and then Joe was the one that, you know, took them back and forth to the airport, and it was like one by one, you know, people started leaving, and the breakfast and dinner table was just getting smaller and smaller. It was a very interesting experience. You see how that builds, like, you know, in Sufism they talk about the aruj, you know, the energy rising. You see it in camp, you know, it's like the big buildup. We all get here, and then now see we're on that nazul, the sort of disintegration, so that rising and falling. And life is like that. Everything's like that, yeah. Just cycles of cycles. Hold hands. O thou who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts that we may hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide. Send us the peace of thy divine spirit and unite us all in thy perfect being. Is your throat too sore? Could you offer something? Is your throat too sore? Can you offer something?
Yeah, I can.
Maybe tell us what the meaning is.
Can I ask, like, what tradition you're looking for? If you're looking for something Islamic or something classic, meaning Western.
I love song.
this is a the meaning is very much you know, the lover who's separated from the beloved, but it's my favorite because it, I think it's the most beautiful one. It's the first one that I learned in this tradition. It's a person who's wandering around their home, knowing that their love isn't there, but still expecting to find them, and still surprised somehow that they're not this person. Yeah. It's called O del mio amato bene.
How you end a class. Yes.
I'll second.